Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening and welcome to The Man's Voice. We're here on July the 9th, and we are hoping that everyone had a wonderful 4th of July. Lots of good food, lots of family, friends, and fireworks. But we're here today to get into a lot of conversation. You know, last week I brought this up, and a lot of the panelists weren't there, so I'm going to open it up again just for some discussion with the panel that we have today. So last week it was Frank and Don, I think. So they know the answer to this question, but my question is, Bruce, we get a lot of around the world people listening into our show. Where do you think most of the people, well, 74% are in the United States, France, most of the rest are in another country. Where do you think that country is?
Most of the people outside of the U.S. is focused in one country, you said?
Well, yeah, the big percentage is in one other country.
Yeah.
I mean, there's 2% in France, and there's 1% in China, there's 1 or 2% in England, but the bulk of it is, where do you think?
It would just be a guess. Australia.
No. What about you, Jeremiah? What do you think?
I don't know. I wouldn't like to, I'll keep taking that wild guess.
Wow. Anyway, we talked about this last night with everyone. I wanted to tell you that a big percentage of people who listen to our show outside the United States are in Russia. Now,
really?
Working all week trying to figure out why that is, and I haven't come to a conclusion yet. But, and I did, you know, I tried to, people who put out the stats, to ask them why. Of course, nobody knows why that is so, but I just thought that was interesting that a large percentage of people who listen to this particular show are in Russia. Like, wow, why are they listening? What's up with that?
It's because anyway, Russia hasn't figured out how to cut us off the air yet, or what?
They're working on it.
All right, I see Frank came in. Now, this is good because Frank is actually, guys, in Greece. He's enjoying the sunshine and the beautiful water there. And we're happy to have him on board. How are you doing, Frank?
Great. Thank you for having me on. And I hope you guys are doing well also. It is beautiful weather here. And I'm on the island of Crete.
Wow. What time is it there? Like 8 hours difference?
7 hours difference. It's 1:00 in the morning, 1:02 or 1:03 in the morning. That's, 7 hours ahead.
Okay. Wow. Well, thanks for
two observations. Frank, you're a good soul, and it's the clearest you've ever been.
You do have a good mind, actually. It's like you're right next to me. So you got to stay in Greece, and you got to go back to Greece and college. Frank is sort of going to be our host today. So, Frank, you want to start some conversation?
Yeah, I do. There's a number of topics that I want to ask you all about, just to get your opinion. I wanted to start off with this this situation with the Twitter, for our president using Twitter just recently. Do you have any comments about his recent use of Twitter?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I think that was Ron. Was that you?
Yeah, this is Ron. Yeah. At first it bothered me that somebody – who is the leader of the world, basically, of the free world, has stooped so low to use Twitter in the way that, President Trump has done. I mean, let me say it this way. I mean, it bothered me at first that he was using Twitter, but then I've grown to realize that, you know, that is a modern way of communication, and it is effective. And I guess it's like any other form of communication. It's how you use it. Now, I don't disagree with the use of Twitter anymore, but I do disagree with, you know, the pettiness of the tweets that the president is putting out there. You know, and I think that goes back to his, that's just who he is. You know, he's in my opinion, he's not a very in-depth person. He's very shallow and superficial in many ways, and you know, that's what, unfortunately, a lot of people gravitate to that in this country.
You know, I think some of his use of social media comes from watching President Obama, maybe, because I think of all the presidents, Barack Obama started using social media to help his to get elected. I don't know if Trump just thinks that's, you know, it helped him a lot. Maybe he thinks as a support mechanism, the people that will, you know, like him for using it. I don't know. What do you think, Don?
Well, you know, David, you brought that up, and you are absolutely right. President Barack Obama was so effective in using social media to win the presidency of the United States. But when he won the presidency of the United States and came into office, they made him turn in his BlackBerry. Back then, they had BlackBerries, and they made him turn it in because they felt it was a security risk. Well, what has happened since then? Why isn't it a security risk with Donald Trump? I can't understand it.
So, okay. Anyone else with comments in regard to the president?
Yeah, Frank, this is Bruce. I tend to agree with what Ron said about it. It is as much as I don't do any tweeting at all, don't even know how to, don't care to, but it is an accepted media now. I think our president misuses it many times as much as he uses it, and it's to his own detriment. I think sometimes he honestly feels it's the only way he can get his slant on things out to the public. Whether that's true or not, I think he honestly believes that. So when he uses it effectively in a way that's constructive, I'm for it. As much as I don't use it, don't care to. But I also think he shoots himself in the foot many times, too, in the way he misuses it and starts up these petty conversations that the media just loves to run with, like a dog with a bone. So I think he's his own worst enemy sometimes in that regard.
I think okay. Maybe the cabinet needs to create a new position, you know, like the gatekeeper of Twitter for President Trump or something like that, you know, to kind of keep it under control a little bit. And, well, you know, it could actually work to his benefit.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, good. Any other comments? Okay. One of the other questions I had is, you know, we just had the 4th of July, and, you know, one of the people that I go to church with basically put something on the fourth saying that they really love the country and are very proud of the country. So there were a couple readings that I had during the 4th of July. One of the readings that I read, it talked about Mr. Douglas, who was one of our early Americans, Negro American. But another reading I had talked about, we owe it to ourselves to grapple with some of the darker sides of our story, and our story being the United States of America. And it was a moment of revolution and democracy, but also a moment of colonialism, genocide, and slavery. Do I have any comments in regard to the 4th of July being a moment also of colonialism, genocide, and slavery? And if that's an applicable today, or for, you know, so you may have let me know what you really think about anyone that would bring up a topic like that. The person was a lady by the name of Amanda Johnson. Again, I also read the story of Mr. Douglas. He was an orator. He was a former slave, and he was asked to speak on the 4th of July.
It's funny. It's that subject is kind of interesting to me, Frank, because the way I feel about it is that we are so we're so safeguarded in this country from outside influences in so many ways, and we're so we're so self-centered that I think everybody in this country feels, you know, that the 4th of July is a time to celebrate. It's a positive thing. But yet, you know, I've got many friends from all different parts of the world, and their viewpoint is not exactly as positive as we may think it is, you know. And in fact, my friends from South America referred to Americans as the imperialist Yankees, you know. So that's definitely not a positive term. That's kind of derogatory. But, you know, there is that side to our history that, you know, a lot of people here probably don't really even know about. I'm embarrassed to say. Or if they do, you know, they tend to brush it under the carpet, you know, and forget about it. But, you know, to every good side, I guess there's a bad side. And we're not perfect by any means. And, you know, we're not, you know, just like we accuse Russia of hacking in our elections. Well, you know, we've done the same things, too.
Okay. Anyone else?
Frank, couldn't we look at? I tend to agree with what you just said, Ron. That, you know, there's a good and bad in probably every holiday and every major thing we do. But I'm thinking, couldn't we discuss this in a more productive way? Couldn't we go back and use history as a way to learn and to improve? We've gotten to the point, it seems like now, we either ignore history, good or bad, or we slant history to change an opinion, or we, you know, do anything but just lay it out what it was. I think even if we laid out history in all, let's take slavery, for example, that was terrible. But I agree, I think you said it, Frank, or somebody did, that we don't, a lot of people have no idea what slaves went through or what it was all about or how its role it really played in history. Do you think we could realistically talk about it in the framework of being history and not draw sides and say, you know, you did this to me or I did that to you? All that happened, but could we tone down some of the emotion and try to understand what went on, not so much always fighting about it, but trying to understand it better? Does that make any sense?
It does make sense.
Yeah.
I think if you dissect why we celebrate the 4th of July, July 4th, 1776, the emancipation of the colonies from Britain has nothing to do with all that went on after July 5th and on. I think it's two different subjects. So I think we celebrate the 4th of July, and most people don't really – they don't even teach that in schools anymore. Little kids don't know that that's what we really celebrate. They think we're celebrating the history of the United States, which I think is a whole different subject matter that hasn't been that attractive in the history books, for real. So I think,
And the further we get away, Frank, the further I think we get away from what history really was, good or bad, and laying it out the way it actually was, and then let people draw their own conclusions from that actuality, the further away we get from that, I think we're in more and more trouble. We got so many people now that don't even know our own history of our own United States, and that is not going in the right direction as far as I'm concerned.
I don't think the history of the United States is something that has been that attractive that we have put it in the right context in teaching it in schools and things. And the reason that we don't is because it's not that great of a history. The American Indians, we liberated them, put them on, took their kids away and it wouldn't let them speak their language. We did the same thing to the community. We did, you know, so United States history isn't figured out how to make it look good. So we also break the 4th of July as the day, which is, you know, a separate piece, but we look at it as history. I don't think we really have gotten into the history of the United States and how we deal with it.
I bet if you go to any school, elementary, middle school, high school, today, and ask kids who Frederick Douglass was, my guess is that the majority and maybe even the overwhelming majority have no clue.
And I don't blame them. I'm not a fan of Frederick Douglass. I mean, there are a lot of people that we've tried to make this man look good. But if you really look at his history, he wasn't all that. He was a great orator. But there are people all over the world who – there are a lot of ministers who do a lot of talking, and in the back rooms, they've got a lot going on that ain't right. And in my opinion, that Frederick Douglass was one of those people. We just don't know the history because they don't tell the history like it was. Once again, the United States is not – has been very good at keeping things under the carpet.
So when we mention that keeping it under the carpet, we're talking about what we may have learned in school, maybe the rosy side of things, but not the thorny side.
Exactly.
You think that might have. Okay.
Right. I tend to think it leans that way more. I don't think that's all of it, but I would tend to think it slants that way, yes.
I have a question that just came in, and someone said, Bruce, in the United States, what is the number one thing that you find attractive in history? Oh, quiet air. Are you thinking?
Yes. What is the number one thing?
That we find number one in our history list, so to speak?
Yes.
Yes.
You know, number one can be a tragic thing or a good thing. It's not necessarily something that was in some people's eyes.
Well, the email is the one good thing that the United States is known for. We're known for
One good thing. Okay, yeah, one good thing.
Known for a lot of things, but what is that one good thing in history that the United States is known for? In other words, they want you to say that. What is the one thing that the United States in your mind is known for since 1776?
That's a question I got to think about.
Yeah, you got to think that long. Something's wrong.
That's a bad answer. I mean,
well,
that's bad.
One of the things that's on the top of my list, and it's not directly related to the 4th of July, is the emancipation of the slaves. And that didn't happen all in one at one date. It was a progression of things, but trying to, at least, there's still some debate on whether people really feel totally free, but trying to make people free and equal in this country is a goal that we need to continue to strive for and in many ways is unique to the United States of America.
Okay, so
you know something, Bruce?
Yes.
That was a great thing that happened in America, but it was also a travesty because we are still feeling the effects of it from an African-American black person's point of view right now when it comes to racism and so forth. One thing about the Jewish population, they said if we don't talk about it, we're doomed to repeat it, and that's the Holocaust. And they make it a point not to never let us forget what happened in the Holocaust.
Well, I agree with that, Don. That goes back to us
not forgetting and not stop talking and educating about our own history, the good, the bad, the ugly, and all of that. I agree with you. We don't have to do a very good job of that anymore.
They never made restitution on slavery. There were a lot of promises made that were not fulfilled. The 40 acres and a mule is one. And every time we try to make headway to correct it, we just need to get in a room and say, hey, listen, my forefathers did something that I'm not proud of, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what my forefather did. I can't change it, but I want to go further. I don't think that's been really brought out.
Well, the question would be also is this, you know, that may not be applicable to a lot of people because, you know, there are some issues that are ongoing right now in regard to the presidency and some supremacist groups. For instance, in Charlottesville, Virginia, which is where the home of Thomas Jefferson, there are some issues that are coming on the horizon again in regard to the naming of parks. You know, they've taken some statues down of Robert E. Lee and renamed the park. And so a supremacist group is going to come in and do a torch burning process, and there's going to be a counter group that's religious oriented that's going to do a counter protest to that. And the mayor and the police chief are asking for both for the religious group not to show up, not to do the protest, because they kind of think that the supremacist group is doing what maybe the president does when he tweets. Just trying, they want us to ignore it, which is counter to what you said the Jewish community would want to do in regard to the Holocaust. So what do you think about, you have a situation where in the United States of America, we have various monuments that are to the Confederacy or to the Confederate way of thinking, and now there's action being taken by city councils and governments to take those statues out or that recognition out for those communities of people who were counter to this slavery thought, or maybe, and some people think that the Civil War had nothing to do with slavery as well. But what's your comments in regard to that, gentlemen? So are you aware that's ongoing right now?
Well, I've seen what you're talking about, Frank, on some of these things and the statues and so forth, and it makes me, and we've got examples of that in Michigan, probably every state of the union, good or bad. But it makes me start thinking about, again, there's good and bad parts of our history. If we're going to neutralize our history, we're not going to understand. Sooner or later, we're going to have generations that aren't going to have a clue how we got to where we are, whether that's a good place or a bad place, or we need to improve on the place we're in. How are we going to know that without knowing truly what our history was? I don't necessarily mean that we ought to go, burn flags everywhere or have statues that were perceived as negative enhanced. But it is part of our history. It is there. I think there's got to be some way to not forget and I don't know if the word is embrace, but understand that there are all these bits of our history that we have to keep intact. Otherwise, we don't have the whole picture of where we got to where we are and how we can improve from that position.
So who knows history? Yeah. Who knows the history? I mean, what is the history? Because, you know, in one case, the president might say that the people who are reporting it might be newspaper related and not accurate. So what is the basic
history. Right now, you know, we hear it often said that we're a Christian nation. Is that a true statement or not a true statement?
I don't think it's wrong or right. I think it's kind of down the center because it's a Christian nation that allows other views on religion. So I think it's not I think the Constitution was written under the Christian faith, but I think we have gone so far, whereas the majority of Americans are possibly Christians, but then there are other religions that are also in the United States. So our history is that we were Christian and we opened that door for other people to come in, whereas some countries didn't. So I think, I wouldn't say we are, I would say we were born as a Christian nation. I wouldn't say we are all Christian right now.
All right.
Well, we're definitely not all Christian. We all know that.
Right.
We do have multiple religions, and the part of the basis of the country we created is supposed to allow that. But I heard some people talking just yesterday about should it be separate little pockets all over the United States, or should it be some sort of assimilation where we all come together as best we can in a like philosophy for this country? And that's a struggle a lot of people are having right now. You know, they want to be here to express maybe their own type of religion or their own way of life, as U.S. as being a place where I can do that and I won't get harassed, or I won't have someone banging down my door to come after me. But yet we're supposed to be a country that comes together. And I think religions right now and several other things are really fracturing us, are really tearing us apart. We're not coming together as a nation of people. We're separate. We're more separate in some ways now than we ever have been.
But I also think...
And you believe in religion?
I think people are using religion to interpret it in prejudices. I think it's all Christian, but the interpretation of it, how it fits my need, how it fits my... which exclude or include whoever I do and do not want. I can have the Bible that make it possible. So we're not coming together as a Christian nation because we're all interpreting the Christianity in a different way.
David, I didn't say coming together as just a Christian nation.
Or even as a nation.
I didn't say that. I said coming together as a people in this nation. No, we're not all Christian. We all know that.
Right.
All right. Never mind.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Frank.
Any other comments on that? Any other thoughts on that as far as us, the statement? A lot of people have said that we're a Christian nation. Anyone else have any thoughts, other thoughts in regard to that? Okay. So... Are you all aware of what's going on with Hawaii 5-0?
No, I'm not.
Hawaii 5-0?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. So if you looked at Hawaii 5-0, it's been on for years. It's an old show that's been brought back with new actors and everything. So the setup, and maybe this may be justifiable, and then again it may not be. But the setup for it is that you have. If I remember, the Hawaiian term for non-Hawaiian is a hali, okay? And hali is, in this case, are Caucasian. So you have Caucasian lead actors that are police officers in Hawaii, and then you have a secondary set of actors that are Hawaiian or Asian in appearance. And then the newer show also has an Afro-American male actor in also, but that's a third, kind of like a third tier. So the pay for the Caucasian actors has not been matched well the secondary actors, which are the Asian actors. And there's a lady and there's a male. and they have been trying to negotiate their pay. So what they've ended up happening is they quit the show. And the show is set to run in Hawaii, which is where it's filmed, and it's been historically filmed there. I used to live there when it was being filmed. And it's going to run without these Asian Hawaii-born actors in the show, and because they refused to give them the same amount of money as they were giving the Hollies. So, what do you? And that relates to our whole show about television. You know, how we create television, the lack of diversity, or it might be in some cases too much diversity in television. So, what's your thought processes of how we depict ourselves and we do our filming and movies, et cetera?
Well, you know, the same thing is happening with Supergirl, I think it is. There was a big to-do in the last couple of weeks about the female actress not getting as much as the co-star actor. And she was getting $300,000 or $30,000, something per episode or something, and the other guy was getting $50,000 per episode. So it's been like that for quite a while. I mean, it's not just race, it's also sex. Women have always said that in Hollywood they're not getting paid, what the male actors are getting paid. So I don't know, you know. And I want to hear from Jeremiah. He hasn't said anything this whole thing. What are you talking about, Jeremiah?
I'm here.
What are your thoughts?
In reference to that, I just think that, especially the time we are now, female actors should be compensated just as the same as male actors, and also regardless of anything, where it comes to nationality or ethnicity, I think everyone should be compensated in the same way, unless you're just, you know, over the top, you know, well-known actor. But baseline going up, everybody should be compensated the same way.
And that includes team sports as well?
What'd you say? well, sports is a little bit
team
different.
Sports?
I think it's a little bit different because let's just say that the NBA versus the WNBA, like you guys can see that new contract that was given to James Harden, with $228 million over 4 years. So I doubt that owners and teams make as much money for the WNBA as the NBA makes and has been making for years. So I don't know if they can give women such lucrative contracts like the NBA can in these franchises.
But the converse of that is, in sports, who is attracting the people that are spending the money to come to be paid? I don't think that the WNBA has attracted enough onlookers to come pay the ticket price to be paid that. But in movies, in Supergirl, you're going to see that the actress, not the supporting actors. So why, you know? So to me, it's a different ball game, because in sports, if the WNBA starts getting thousands of people to come see them, I think they'll go up in salary. But right now, that's not happening. But in movies, some of the, you know, the female actresses are calling or getting people to come see the movies because of them, but they're not getting paid with the male actors who are with them being paid. So I think it's
David. Yes. But David, going back to sports, I was just thinking, you know, because I'm a tennis fan, and I think Venus and Serena Williams, or, you know, whoever's at the top of the ladies' tennis, which, by the way, in my opinion, and I don't know if this is a fact or not, but just as many people watch women's tennis as they do men's, and yet I still think that the men's, you know, the top men players in the world get more in the Grand Slams than the women do. So, you know, I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair for Rafael Nadal to get more money than Venus Williams.
I don't either, but I never knew that. I mean, I didn't know. I never heard their salary thing, but I don't either. You go to see them play, so they should be making the top dollar.
Right.
It's who has the name recognition.
I guess it all depends on on how much money you bring into the, you know, the organization.
And sometimes women have the name and they still don't get paid. So I don't think that's probably
a that's the case in the U.S. The U.S. soccer team, that was their problem. You know, I don't know if you're aware, but the U.S. women's soccer team is much more popular than the male soccer team. And they were going on strike. Yeah, they were going on strike because their salary was nowhere. They're like giving $45,000.
Yeah, wasn't it? One-tenth the salary of the men's.
Yes, yes.
That's horrendous.
So there's been...
Frank, yes. So your original scenario of Hawaii 5-0, is it so much the race and the nationality of the actors, or is it the way you laid it out, the secondary actor level versus the major actor level? Those two that I've watched the show, I know who you're talking about. Weren't they considered the second tier, as you described, kind of? Wouldn't they get a, quote, second tier salary then?
Well, they are the second tier, and I always wondered about that as well because, you know, I was there when they originated Hawaii 5-0. It was always strange to me. The population makeup of when I lived in Hawaii was 50%, over 50% Asian, the majority population. The majority population today is greater than 50%. And the next larger population was the Caucasian population in Hawaii, but that's now changed. So it's an Asian population depicting Hawaii. And sometimes it's kind of interesting to me, the focus on a lot of the shows that I've observed have been Hawaii related. In other words, there's drugs coming into Hawaii and there are Hawaiians doing the drug handling and things like that, not some other stateside type Marine that's more Caucasian doing it. So, but you're right. The way the show has been created, they're on the secondary level. And I think what they're trying, and that's the way the show was originally created. And I think these actors and actresses have quit. So now you're going to have a show in Hawaii that doesn't include a Hawaiian, so to speak. And that's what I thought to be strange.
Well,
yeah, because they did quit.
Yeah, but did they quit for the right reasons? That's what you and I don't know.
Well, you know, that's the other thing. Now, the CBS is a station that carries this thing. So some people are saying that CBS does not recognize diversity well. So that's been going on. This pay, this salary thing has been going on in television with the different networks in television based on who they've hired. And for instance, you know, Fox News brought over Megyn Kelly. And as a result of bringing Megyn Kelly over, one of the second tier on newscasters, a lady, Tamara Hall, walked off her show because she didn't want to be from the network side, a team player. From her side, she was being asked to step aside so that Megyn Kelly could have, you know, this time slot.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what we've got to figure out ourselves, whether we're set up that way in society, whether that's equitable, whether or not people would be looking at the show, other people would be looking at the shows if it was configured a little bit differently. And that's why I wanted to consult you all on did you notice it? Do you notice that in shows? And how do you feel about it? And you guys are just silent, I tell you. So, Don, tell me what you think about that.
Well, you know, I really don't. I don't have an answer. To be very truthful with you, Frank, you know, I just think that they got so much politics going on right now in the business, and it's strange you mentioned Megyn Kelly. Man, this lady marketed herself very well. I think she did a great job of marketing herself to be able to leave and go to Fox Television, and man, they paid her handsomely. And I mean, she did a great job. And a lot of politics was used in it too.
Yeah.
How's she doing in her new position?
She's doing good.
Well, there is.
There's
a question. There's a question on different sides. One side of the question is, how could you hire somebody from Knox Fox News to come over to a major network like this network she's on now? And because some people believe that some of her segments that she held while she was on Fox News are negatively racial oriented or negative to racial or enhanced racial stereotypes. Something that effect. So there are people who look at that. She has said herself that her appearance has a lot to do with her being on TV. So she's considered to be attractive by a lot of people, and that might be the reason why she draws as much money. But she's also, you know, smart. She's an educated lawyer, so she does have that going for her. But they're wondering why the network would hire her, because, you know, the networks are generally considered to be liberal networks, I guess, the major networks. And she doesn't seem to have a fit by some people's opinion. And what do you think about that, Ron? Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's all kind of weird. The fact that she came over from a conservative station and now you know, I don't know. I just, there's something about it that makes me distrust the media even a little bit more. And journalism is my background. I mean, so I grew up believing that the media is always impartial and everything. But lately, I mean, that vision of mine of the media has kind of fractured a little bit. And this just adds a little more fuel to the fire. I don't know. I don't know what to say about it.
What do you think is going on there? Just from your thought process, share that with us. What do you feel that might be going on?
Well, I really don't know. I mean, you've got ABC, CBS, NBC, you know, those are, as Trump calls them, the fake media. And it's, you know, I'm watching NBC News right now, nightly news, you know, and I believe pretty much everything that I hear on there. But then, you know, you put on a different, not so liberal news station and you hear different stories. And I was actually talking to one of my brothers earlier today, and he was telling me, oh, you haven't heard about all the positive things that happened during Trump's, you know, recent trips because you listened to the fake news media. And I'm like, you know, that kind of threw me off guard. And, you know, again, I grew up thinking that the media has to report what the facts, you know, but lately I've noticed, and I've actually paid closer attention to this. I've noticed that even with the sound bites that they use, they sometimes put them out of context. They, meaning the liberal media, which is the ones that I watch, so I can't speak for the others, but they put them out of context and to kind of persuade me to believe what they want me to believe. So, you know, I'm a little skeptical.
All right. So are you all aware of what happened with the tweet on the, or the video tweet and CNN that was the president did, where I guess he interposed the wrestling video thing, and he. Okay, what do you think about that, folks? Some people said that you should ignore it.
I can't ignore it, Frank. I thought that was very childish. I thought that was a reason why he's experiencing some of the things that he's experiencing with his attack on the media. That has a subliminal effect. Why would you wrestle a network down like that, it's childish. I mean, come on, you're the president of the United States of America, the free country in the world, the most powerful country in the world, and you're wrestling like a clown on the ground, like a fool with a network image. What kind of mess is that?
But, Don, you know, I talked to one of my brothers, and both of my brothers voted for Trump. Of course, I didn't. And they thought it was the greatest thing. You know, they thought it was funny. They thought it was great that he did it. So, and you know, that's 50% of America, unfortunately.
You know, he prides himself on dealing with the media, and he does a great job. He's one of the best presidents that we've ever had that knows how to manipulate the media. He prides himself on over having 200 million Twitter persons connected to his engagement. 200 million. That's bigger than any radio or television station in the world.
All right. Any other comments on that?
Did Donald Trump, did the president create that video, or one of his supporters?
It's attributed to him directly. I don't know if he did the artwork, you know, but he released it. And,
he did. He personally released it.
Yeah, the Speaker of the House was flabbergasted, and so are some other.
I would tend to agree that the presidency doesn't, as much as you might think it's funny or it's disgusting, depending on what side you're on. It's not a playground the president of the United States should be playing in.
Okay,
it's far too serious a position. He could have easily just said, you know, okay, that's some people having some fun. I don't agree with it. End of conversation. But I also, as a sidebar, I don't know what station to turn to, and I tend to listen to all of them. I listen to the major news networks and Fox to get both perspectives. I don't listen one side or the other. And This craziness, I just shake my head about, you know, the issue about the man spread, about the president of Russia and the United States, how far apart their legs were, and this and that. I said, you've got to be kidding me. Is this what the news really wants to report on? And my whole point of bringing that up is, when are we going to get our news people, all of them, to report responsibly? When are we going to get the heads of these companies to get off this crazy, idiotic approach and report valid, appropriate, beneficial news? I wonder where it's going to go.
Okay.
You know,
go ahead.
Something, gentlemen. We used to have good quality news back when Walter Cronkite and Dan Rather. These were believable guys that had appointment television that you would go home and sit in front of your television at 6 o'clock and watch and believe what they said because it was factual. But we had an insertion of reality shows and sitcoms, and the reality shows just took over. Just craziness on television. So I think a lot of news has adopted that same method, that same television style. And that's what's happened. We've gone through two decades of reality shows.
Well, one of the big factors, Don, is I couldn't agree with you more. It was quality news. And it was news that you could almost believe by itself. Whether you form your own opinion, it wasn't twisted or tainted one way or the other. That was back when news stations had their time on TV for free. They did not pay. Now
That's
they
right.
have to have ratings and make money, and it's and news, you hit it when you said news has become reality show TV. It's not news anymore. I wish we could go back to giving them their time for free so they don't have to try and make money.
Right. Before we move,
the other thing is that
I have a text from one of our listeners who said it was one of Trump's supporters that created the video and then Trump retweeted it.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
But still, he shouldn't
right.
have.
Right. So, have you know, we've the market for media now, or I was just reading a couple of days back, has been it's been grown smaller. So whereas in the past they were looking for large segmented markets, the market is segmented to millions and 2 millions and like that, whether it be internet. As a result of that now, my understanding is more focus is being put to those small places. So you would have difference of opinions coming from those various different newscasters, because we well know that two people can see the same thing and report it differently.
So what are you saying, Frank? Do you think the more regional, smaller networks are tending to be more honest or more untainted, unslanted? What do you mean?
Well, I think it's business like you all have indicated, but I think that individual people are now becoming the focus point versus like the Walter Cronkite, who had millions of people trusting and believing him. Now, I think there you could be a hate monger, for instance, and you could create a following on radio or written because all you need is this, you know, this million persons following. And, your sponsorship and things like that are looked at a lot differently in smaller segments of the market. There's more markets and smaller segments. That's what I was reading, like I said, about a week ago. So the other thought in this whole process, has the U.S. retired from world leadership? And I say this in relationship to the G20 meeting, and I say this in relationship to the agreements that the U.S. is failing to be involved in any longer because the president thinks that the U.S. is being taken advantage of. And it seems that the other players, China, Japan, and Russia, are moving on without us.
Yeah, that certainly
Jeremiah?
Yes.
What do you think about this relationship that we have now today as a leadership in the world versus in the past? Do you think we're giving up our place that we've had, or is it time for someone else to take the baton?
I would say with Trump's social media tirades, I'm not such of a social media person. I don't like it. I don't like the direction we're going as far as the United States, things that our president is doing. I don't think it's okay. But, you know, we can't do anything. There's nothing much we can do at this time but just give him more time, let us play his court. I would have liked to have a different president, but then again, the United States voted for Mr. Trump. So I would still give him this opportunity, still let him keep messing up, and hopefully something happens. That's about it for now.
All right. Thank you, Bruce.
I'm not as hopeful as I was a few months ago, but
yes,
you got to let
it out.
So do you think we're still a world leader, or were we in the past a world leader?
No, I think we're still a world leader. Has our leadership role changed? Is it always changing in one way or another? Yes. I don't think we've stepped back so far that we're not being counted on, looked at, or reacted to. you could debate whether it's a stronger or a weaker leadership role, but we're still very much in a leadership position, whether we want to be or not. We're still going to be looked at, and even in our not acting, that's an action to other countries. They're going to react to us acting or not reacting. So we really can't get out of a leadership role by basis of who we are.
Okay.
We just have a community office. That's it.
The Affordable Health Care Act, how many of you think that people have a right to health care? When I say a right to it, that whether they work, you know, and they were lying in the streets injured, they should be able to be treated at a hospital and just move on. And how many of you don't believe that people have a right to free health care?
I think it should be a right. I think every human being should have a right to actually, I feel it should be free health care, but that's a little extreme.
Okay. Speak up, gentlemen.
You're giving a notion that...
Go ahead, Jim.
I was going to say, you're saying that the discrepancy comes in whether people that probably make $40,000 to $50,000 a year, they lie or say they're not employed just to receive cheaper or free health care?
No. What I was implying is right now the basic political process is, for instance, in the Republican Party and in the Democratic Party, some Republicans believe that humans do not have a right to free health care. Some Democrats, on the other hand, may believe that everyone has a right to health care, and there's some people in the middle in other aspects. That's the basic thing we're going right now. Some countries, for instance, European countries, have free health care. Everybody is signed up for health care. And other countries like the United States, right. Yeah, in other countries like the United States, there are some people who believe that should happen and some people who don't. So, it just goes to whether or not if a person is injured or sick and they go and show up at a hospital, should they have insurance? Or should they be responsible for paying first before they're treated?
Negative. I mean, I think that should be nowhere. Paying first before you're treated, that's horrendous. But I think that because and not only being injured, there's a large amount of mental illness in the United States and around the world. So I think that free health care is the way to go, is the way to be.
You know something? Free health care should be afforded to everybody in our country. And what's so terrible about the situation is we have politicians and lawmakers receiving free health care. I mean, free health care for the rest of their life, and will stoop down and refuse to want to give health care to a person that's been pre-injured, a person that's fallen on bad times. Lord forbid if they ever took the free health care away from our politicians. What would they do if something catastrophic happens to them? What would they do? I'm paying for those senators and those Congress people health care. My tax dollars are paying for them.
That's the point. They don't. No health care is free. Should we deny people health care? I do not think we should deny them. But make no mistake, gentlemen, no health care is free. It all has to be paid for in one way or another. You just pointed that out, and I agree with what you said. But this misnomer that, oh, it's free, it's not free. It's paid for. What we have to decide is how we distribute it so that the people that truly need it, and there's no getting out your wallet and paying for it. But it's not free. Don't forget that.
All right, gentlemen, let me jump in here.
Got it. With that, David,
and I want to thank, I want to thank Frank for leading this up here today, and we want to invite everyone back for next week for The Man's Voice. The show just ended, and we will hope to see you all again next week. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Frank.
Thank you,
Frank.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, have a great time,
enjoy,
guys.
Enjoy the other part of the world. Take care.
I will. Thank you. All right. This year, well, I'll be back in the United States someday. All right.
You did a good job.
Bye now. Thank you very much. It's over.